Hello, welcome to Pharmacy in Practice podcast. Good friend and colleague who we've pharmacy in practice has bumped into a few times over the years, actually. Yasmin Carson, how are you doing today, Yasmin?
Hi, yes, great, thanks. Lovely to be here.
Well, I have to apologize because the listeners won't, or viewers or whatever, however you're watching this, they won't be aware of this, but I was quite late, so I have to give an apology. 20 minutes late, flat tire in my pickup, which I had to fix, and I just ran up the hill to my house, so that's why I'm looking a bit like flustered. So but I was really, really, really dead excited to have a chat with Yasmin, because Yasmin, I'll let you delve into your very successful career already in a minute. But the reason I got in touch was to chat about artificial intelligence, machine learning, all this, what I think is quite ethereal stuff to a degree, which is quite ironic because I'm sure it's based on logic, algorithmic logic, and so on and so forth. But I think from the general public and probably the professional public, I guess, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, it's quite ethereal. No one really fully understands it, and there's some quite interesting existential questions to ask as well. So, but before we chat about that, what's your career journey, really, Yasmin? What have you done in your career? I know you've been involved in PhD work. I you could say it better than I can, so I'll pass it over to you.
Thanks, Joy. You know what? I actually find this like the hardest question because I've never had like a straightforward path, as it were, as someone might say. You know, you plan out your career and that's where you're going to end up. But I've never really had that. So essentially, I did my MPharm at, well, it was the Square back then, but now it's UCL School of Pharmacy. And that was about, I guess, 10 years ago. And then I went and did my pre-reg in hospital, which was great. Did my Band 6 residency in hospital, really gave me that clinical, I guess, basis, to kind of really get my teeth into the clinical side of pharmacy. And I really enjoyed that actually, because especially for the pre-reg exam, it really helped learning quite easily, like easily. And you could see a lot of these things in practice, you know, like the prescriptions of IV bags and all these kind of things that you may not see in other sectors. And then I did so the residency, which was kind of like a 24-hour service essentially. You basically have a different shift pattern, you know, 9 to 5, 5 to midnight, midnight till the next morning. And although you have like a senior to support you, and that I think that stint really built up my resilience, which is why I feel like I have a lot of confidence to delve into different areas and things like that, because it really just built me up as, right, you know, if you can't do it, you learn it and you just carry on and roll with it. I did that for a bit, and then I got married, and my husband's from Bristol originally, so we moved there. Then I locumed around different hospitals there, and I actually really, really loved that because working, I've never been one to stick at one thing at one time, which you guys will probably hear about later on. So I really loved working with different teams. So working as a locum in hospital allowed me to work with different hospital teams. And what you realize is that everyone runs their team really differently. Although the processes are very similar, you know, the conclusions, the outgoings, your dispensing and script are very similar, but the way that people do it is very, very different depending on what team you're part of. And I found that really, really interesting actually, to kind of see that diversity. And that is what brought me to do a PhD. So then I got an opportunity to do a PhD at Nottingham. And that was, it was called New Models of Care in Community Pharmacy. But it basically, as the PhD evolved, it sort of explored, you know, the perception of community pharmacy in the wider NHS system,
Okay.
and also how, you know, different models of care that we could do, you know, to link better in with either primary care or secondary care. Or at that point, there, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, NHS England had developed these Vanguard sites. which were basically like whole system sites where they wanted to put like a whole service through from like the community care up to hospital to kind of figure out how it would work. And you know, a lot of the sites never even involved community pharmacy, which is really interesting to find out. And then it was about delving in to okay, why? And then a lot of the same similar kind of answers came, you know, as we all know already, communication, stakeholders, your network, who do you know, technology being a really big one. And yeah, so that was really interesting. And then after that, so in between then, I had a couple of kids, which really kind of
Just had
got
a couple of
me,
kids, yeah,
yeah,
just like that, yeah. Okay, carry
which kind
on.
of just got me more sweet thinking time actually to think about, okay,
Okay, interesting.
where do I want to go with this? And to be honest, in terms of, I never really, I like academia and I went there for a challenge, but I'm not one to kind of sit there and I guess write grant papers and proposals. You know, it wasn't really my passion, but I mean, I did like doing it, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
It was pretty.
I don't fully understand academia either. I have to declare I'm, like, what would I say, like, consciously incompetent around academia. I don't fully know how it works. You know, I know about peer, obviously, I know, I understand the different levels of evidence and so on and so forth, and how to read a paper properly. But the ins and outs about how the money flows and getting published, and I assume there's politics and stuff that I don't really understand yet, but I've always been interested in research into practice. So, but yeah, our this is a shameless plug. I'm pausing because I'm shoehorning in a plug for our conference next year. When you were speaking about academia and stuff like that, I think, oh my goodness, I don't know that much about it. But I will surround myself with people that do. But we're doing a research poster event, and I'm sort of trying to be the opposite of snobby about it and really include anybody that wants to have a go from, you know, from a very simple audit up. But so what
I
was
think
you?
that's great.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I know. I think that's brilliant because you know that, like, prior to going in for this PhD, which I honestly think I got by luck. I'm not even kidding you. Okay, you know how some people have, like, I have to do a PhD, that is my goal to get to. I was like, okay, I'm looking for a new challenge. Claire Anderson had put it on Twitter. So I was like to my husband, should I just apply and see what happens? I mean, I know about community pharmacy. I know this, so let me just. And then it happened, and I was like, "Wow, okay." And
Nice.
then, and yeah, I learned so much in that because you know, when you're not in the academic field, there's a lot to learn. It's, you know, it's like a new job. There is so much to learn about how it works and things like that. So
Yeah,
no,
like
I think.
convention kind of thing. There must be conventions that I don't know about because I've never done that. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like having an inclusive sort of area where anyone and anyone can submit anything in terms of posters or getting that practice, I think it really, really will help the community to support that drive to reduce that barrier.
Yeah, it's not about dumbing it down, but it's just about narrowing that gap between, you know, like, you know, the people, like the folk that are right at the top of the profession, consultant pharmacists, and you know, they're constantly being published. I've got this sense that there's a big gap between those people and people in practice that have still, you know, have got loads to offer. Obviously, the caveat is if you're doing an anecdotal case report, then you know you need to see that in context. And actually, that's, sorry, I'm digressing here, but that's something we don't really do in pharmacy, or if we do, I'm missing it. We don't really do case reports.
No, which would definitely help a
Yeah.
lot, you know, like because we can really learn so much from each other in terms of, you know, especially in community practice, how do we deliver services? How are we doing to like support our timings and in the demographical area, like how do you support one community person's problems? I think definitely case report sharing is really important because that basically is what journaling is, isn't it? You just submit something to a journal so other people can learn and maybe use the same methodology.
That's it. And I guess there's checks and balances, but there's probably academic colleagues shouting at the screen or shouting
Sorry.
at, when they're out on the run, you know, at this podcast, at how little I know about academia. But anyway, I totally digress. So
Yes,
interestingly,
sorry.
are you quite entrepreneurial then?
Yeah, so throughout the time where I was doing like that PhD and even before then, I've kind of like dabbled in a few things. I've done a bit of a YouTube channel, but as we were discussing earlier, sorry, before the recording started, guys, about like content creation and things, and it just takes a lot of time, right? And it's the commitment that's required. So then after that, I did started my I would say my first official business, which was building a festival pharmacy type business. So I had like a little
Excellent.
van, and I opened pharmacies at festivals because, you know, we all love to see festivals, but also it'd be helpful if we could make money by enjoying ourselves.
Yeah,
But
sounds
actually that,
ideal.
yeah, but you know what? It was actually really, really, really interesting. Like the amount of different people you get at festivals, also in terms of discussing, you know, your two wham questions with people that are drinking alcohol or potentially could be taking drugs or, you know, those kind of things. Like, and it was, I remember one of the seasons we did was that really, really, really hot summer where literally you were getting people were just getting so much sunburn and things like that. And it was about managing. And we had quite a good relationship with St. John's Ambulance. So they would refer people to us. We'd be able to treat them that way. And yeah, it was just, I really enjoyed it actually. And then obviously COVID hit, so it kind of went a bit stale. But yeah, so that was
Yeah,
exciting.
that's like, no, that sounds really interesting. And I've heard of readers or viewers or listeners or whatever will probably correct me or suggest who this is, but I'm pretty sure there was a guy who was doing similar to that in Wales. You maybe know, was there? He was going around festivals and so on and so forth.
There were a couple of people that were doing it at the same time I
Were
was
there?
doing it. So, but I've never met anyone. And but
No.
obviously I've seen online. So yeah, potentially. But I think it's you know, it's hard work. You're like your days are like 5 a.m. till 3 a.m. the next morning. Like it's all you don't get any sleep.
Hardcore,
But
yeah.
it's
It's quite.
like five days of like really, really hardcore work.
But
But yes.
sorry, Cara,
Oh, go on.
it's quite interesting. It's quite. I guess you're catching people in that setting, where they are, aren't you? You know, maybe people that don't always present
Yeah.
to a pharmacy. You know, a bricks and mortar pharmacy. Quite an interesting business model. So, was that your only business?
Yeah, so that was my like first one, and then I kind
Okay.
of got the taste of like, oh, I like this entrepreneurial type. Like, because you, I guess once you've done your degree and got your learnings and thing, there's obviously so much more to learn in the world, but also it's time to put it into practice and experiment and, you know, kind of have fun with it. So I then. After that, so hold on, sorry, I always get confused about this. So then, after I finished my PhD, I joined an accelerator, which was an interesting kind of thing. It was based in London, and it basically put, I call it was like Love Island for entrepreneurs. So basically, what they did was they put domain experts, which I count as one, so like healthcare expert or different experts in finance or whatever fields, like construction or whatever. With tech people and business people, so MBAs, and then they would get you to do like apprentice style challenges over a week, 2 weeks until you find your potential co-founder. So that was really, really interesting because it put me in a field of loads of different people and, you know, getting to know and networking, which is really, really important, but also appreciating that everyone has a different view of building a business or solving a problem. So from that, I got a co-founder and we worked on this idea, which is kind of half running at the moment. He's left now, but I'm still kind of like running it in the background. And it's basically like a private prescribing tool to support pharmacies to do private prescribing. I am still, it's kind of just in its really infant stages at the moment. So I wouldn't really say it's anything at the moment, but it's exciting because, so after a PhD, I went and did like a tech degree. So I did a master's in artificial intelligence. So while I was on this accelerator, I was doing the master's and I kind of developed, you know, so I learned Python coding, which is a coding language. And then I used this as an experiment to sort of, you know, use it and see
Yeah.
what we can build. And obviously, you know, I'm heavily rooted, I would say, in community pharmacy. I forgot to mention earlier, my parents have a couple of pharmacies as well, so I've been embedded since basically like I was born. So I think every time I think of a solution or try and be entrepreneurial, it generally stems towards pharmacy or something to do with medicines. Sorry.
That's no, it's awesome. It's really interesting. I think that whole scene around, supporting pharmacies, technological solutions to support pharmacies, that whole scene is really busy at the moment. There's an awful lot of platforms out there to do your CD register, do all the stuff basically that was on paper before, wasn't it? It's quite a cluttered market. But competition's good, and I've always been an advocate for, starting your own business. I mean, I think it's brilliant what you've done.
And I guess like it just I kind of even if I think something that I've learned as I guess an entrepreneur is that even if you build something, you've built something with passion and you've trying to you test it out in the market, and if it fails, that's fine. You just roll with it, change as you get the feedback, and then it just kind of build something else. So sorry to end the story. Your viewers are probably just thinking, what is this girl on about? Like, seriously. But basically, to end the story, where I've ended up right now is that I've developed, on top of this prescribing thing, a pharmacogenomics business. So that's hopefully like the end goal, to really kind of target patients, targeted dosing, using AI to read databases to really kind of focus. Okay, how can we actually help these patients on the ground in a really precise way? Because all these other industries, airline industry, finance industry, they all have access to this technology and are utilizing it to its fullest to really cut down the paperwork, optimize workflows, all of those kind of things. So why, and I why don't we have it in healthcare? And I understand that
Well,
one of the barriers is like regulation,
that is
but
it. Is it? Is it
I mean,
though?
from my opinion, I think it possibly could be regulation, but it's not like a barrier. It's more like a dungeon with like holes that you could possibly like.
You know, like I love speaking to other people that have done businesses, and I've got a few. So I've got Pharmacy Practice, we've got Pharmacy Finder. And randomly, I've now got a forestry company as well. So nothing to do with pharmacy, but I totally get what you're talking about around feeling. I mean, one of the things I was worried about actually before, I'll come back to the what we're speaking about, but what I was worried about coming back into practice a year and a half ago was like how I'd be perceived, how will I get feedback? So I just built a website called pharmacyfeedback.co.uk. Now
Love that.
that's not commercial, but when I was trying to access the GPHC website this week to do my revalidation, I put in some anonymous quotes from actual patients. So, because I reckon that's pretty solid evidence around,
That is, and that's
what,
amazing.
well, that, but there's no money in it. But it's just, I think it's just what I was trying to explain to Yasmin. It's just like, I love speaking to people like you because it's just the mindset. It's like you've got a combination of like the theory of constraints. So what's the idea? What's the problem? Does the population you're trying to serve care about that problem? How am I going to fix it? What's the constraint? Okay, I've met that, and then constraint, change, and that's the cycle that I really enjoy, because occasionally you'll jump across it. I mean, maybe you'll have to do like 10 really difficult constraints. Oh, this is exhausting. And then the 11th one is like, right, boom, off we go. And it works, But your thing, where does this malaise in healthcare come? I'm not speaking necessarily about pharmacy per se in isolation, but there is a, is it, is it, is there an arrogance around the professions? Like, is it, are we still in this like paternalistic, like practitioner says, patient does? Because there are, honestly, there are like our pharmacy finder thing is basically like a marketing funnel with a booking appointment system. It's really not complicated, like, but folk are folk can be resistant to change and to using it when it's just a very simple tool that, I mean, I don't approach folk that are very good on that front, that do very good marketing, but if they need a bit of a help hand with that, it's like a no-brainer, Yasmin. So what could do you understand what the malaise in healthcare is around innovating and not even business, just like quality improvement? Is it just
Yeah,
a
I think I get what you're saying. I think there's a lot of different facets to this. And having done a few talks about AI and pharmacy and things like that, like I've spoken to a lot of people in our profession, but also outside our profession as well, where, our jobs as clinicians are very full on, and they're very, I guess, it takes a lot of brain work to really like diagnose or whatever you're doing in the field, it's a lot. So I think adding a technology facet can sometimes either be too complicated or hard to add in, but also the worry of, so if I'm doing a consultation or whatever I'm doing, I know where the data is going. If I use external technology, where is that data going? And am I going to be the one in trouble if there's a data leak? I mean, those are kind of, I guess, my reservations around when I first initially thought, oh God, like what can we use in technology? And then I went and obviously learned a bit more about it and figured out about these data sets and cybersecurity and protection. But I guess not everyone has that. And it is difficult from, I think, transitioning from something, a process that you're really used to then using something as a tool, because
yeah.
do we 100% trust it, especially when you're dealing with a patient's confidential data?
Yeah. And I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that yet. But as a cautious pharmacist, I would be on the AI front very cautious. So let's get into AI. So what is AI? Could you explain it in a like a tweet, in a couple of sentences?
Oh, I should have had that line where I just read off. So basically, in my opinion, AI stands for artificial intelligence. So essentially what it's doing, it's a computer program that is mimicking the human brain, essentially. And obviously there is an extent and a level as to which the AI can do that. But that's essentially what it's doing. So a lot of the things in the AI field, mimic. So for example, one of the processes we use are called developing neural networks, which similarly are supposed to mimic the neural networks that we have in our brain. So that's kind of, I guess, my understanding of artificial intelligence.
I mean, and very, and I am going to come across as possibly a bit thick here, but I don't care. Because I don't think you can, with something so gigantic, I don't think you can oversimplify it enough to help people access it. So, I was thinking about some innovations over the years and, like take an airplane. Humans, whoever invented the airplane, the Wright brothers, wasn't it? They must have looked at birds and thought, right, they've got wings. How does that work? So is it an oversimplification to say that scientists have looked at the brain and thought, right, this is how the neurons fire and this is perhaps how and the whole neural network thing, is that, can you go into a wee bit more about what that is, Yasmin?
Yeah, I guess a possible angle could have been that, but I think it has a lot as well to do with psychology and cognition. So how do we come to a decision? Whether it's, how do we decide from like a chocolate ice lolly to a vanilla ice lolly, or going a bit more complicated if we're going to talk about healthcare, how do we come to a decision from a list of differential diagnoses? So it's looking at that decision practices. And a lot of these, I guess, computer science type technologies are based on maths. So I don't know if you remember back in A levels, you had a module called decision maths. And that's basically where it sort of stems from. And then you're incorporating percentages of probability and statistics and different
Right, and so it
statistical
goes on.
analyses.
Okay,
Yeah, and
it
it
goes
goes,
down
and
the
you can
rabbit hole of percentages and probability and right, okay.
essentially, and you can build those on top of each other, which then kind of formulates the basis of the neural network. And then I guess so in terms of AI, you've got two different ways you can teach this program. And one is supervised, where you're in control of everything you're putting in. So, you've got like a data set, say an Excel spreadsheet of something, different colors, different days of the week, different weathers, and you're saying, okay, run this statistical regression and tell me what it's going to be on Thursday. Right. And then so that you're basically in control of what it's ejecting. Whereas
Okay.
you've also got one called a line called unsupervised learning, where you're saying, okay, AI, here's a data set, tell me what patterns you see. And then it could come up with something completely different or something very similar.
Tell me about biases within that model, because we're surrounded by, but we're all biased subconsciously by, there's been a lot of talk in the culture wars about bias and so on over the last few years. But have you any insight into healthcare related applications so far and whether bias has been ironed out? I mean, who decides the starting point for an artificial intelligence tool?
Well, exactly. So, yeah, coming on, yeah, bias is such a huge important factor in this. And I think just injecting my opinion here, I think it's not recognized enough, especially not just in healthcare, but I think across the realm in terms of services that are using AI. We already know in the financial services, they will ask your ethnicity, they will ask your, where you live, who you are, everything about you. And give you a mortgage application based on that, and it's a shame that it incorporates your age or your ethnicity or things like that, because you're really blocking, like, why should it, to be honest? But on the flip side, obviously, in terms of if we're focusing on healthcare, so AI in healthcare, there's slowly regulations coming in. To my knowledge, the people that are recognized, like, are reviewing the applications to whether to get, this medical device stamp. I don't know how far they go into looking at data sets for biases. So essentially, what it the people who like and going to your initial question, who's in charge of starting that? So obviously, it's the founders of these companies that are using these data sets. And to be honest, I think the onus starts with them, their tech people, or them to say, okay. Are there biases in our data set, and how do we mitigate all these, right? Because you can put mitigations in depending on what kind of algorithm you're using. And then I think it's really, really important in healthcare for that to be recognized, because we don't want to become into a situation where you're going to have, clinical devices that are going to eject bias information, or even like give biased decisions. But that's also why I think it's really important at this stage right now to have a clinician to overlook those that information. I think there's a variation, right? Like if you're looking at so there's a lot of radiological companies that look at images and have thousands and thousands of images to then give you have the AI diagnose a chest X-ray or any other radiological image, which I think has less likeliness to put input bias in, because you're literally asking them to look at thousands of different X-rays. To my knowledge, I don't think they're incorporating the patient's ethnicities or things like that. But then as soon as you start adding in those parameters, then the narrative becomes a bit different.
I just think it's fascinating. Like, I think taking a step back from healthcare, I think we're in quite an interesting time, really. It is an oversimplification to say that sort of the nation state, as it were, globally, kind of dominated in years gone by, and there have been various empires over the years that have risen and fallen, of course. And but usually those, my sort of ignorant knowledge of history, that things have happened, and there have been borders that have been fought over, and so on and so forth, and things have ebbed and flowed and changed over the centuries. But I think we're in this time now where, and I think the internet started it, the social media companies were were the first real manifestation of this idea that one person or a very small number of people beyond your country has an awful lot of, like, a disproportionate level of control over the narrative or influence within a country. And I just have this sense, just from a purely common sense point of view, Yasmin, you've probably got far more insight than I do, having done your master's and all the rest of it. But I sense we're at that. Do you remember when Twitter was nice? Remember back at the start, and
Back in the
everyone
day.
came on and was like, oh, let's look, and it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, we arguably met, you're one of many folk that I've touch base with through Twitter, and then you've got this lovely relationship thing where you bump into someone at conference, and it's actually in your head, it's not the first time you've met, sort of.
Yeah, I love that feeling.
Yeah, it's good, it's nice, and it still exists for normal people, but there are yeah, Twitter's gone, that's a whole other conversation. But I just get this sense that we're at the start of AI, and I think the genie is probably out of the bottle, although I don't have tangible evidence to back that up yet. I'm not sure anybody does. What do you reckon?
In terms of
Just, do you think, I mean, this is, it's pretty much unregulated at the moment. I mean, when I spoke to I met Duncan Rudkin at the pharmacy show, and we were chatting about our, because I interviewed him about a year and a half ago, and I made the point to him. I mean, I was trying to challenge him gently, of course, as gently as you dare to challenge a regulator, but anyway, regulation always lags behind practice in healthcare, in pharmacy. So the regulator's always behind. Prescribing is a great example. Prescribing in community pharmacy is an even better example of how the regulator probably could catch up a bit. But anyway, I'm just making the point that, and seeking your, see what you think about it around the fact that I think AI is already a way over there, miles over the horizon, arguably, and we're just starting to have the conversation about regulation,
Yes, I would agree actually. And I think obviously in other sectors, AI has completely taken its own kind of form. And as you mentioned, in social media and things like that, it's freedom of the voice. But if you start putting sanctions, are you sanctioning people's voices? Or, it's a whole different paradigm. I think in healthcare, regulation has always known to be extremely slow and not catch up with the technologies that are already out there. And you've got, entrepreneurs, people who just want to see change so that they can be the best person they can be in their role. Trying to push these boundaries and change the regulations. So, not so long ago, I did my training in clinical safety, and I'm currently doing it in medical devices at the moment because I want to be able to position myself as a person who can discuss these, to push these boundaries, not only to I guess push regulation in a safe way so that we can have more iteration, faster products coming onto the market without all these sanctions, but also do it in a safe way, but also have people at the table that really recognize biases, limitations, and those kind of things. So I think it's really important to have the right voices at the table. So I think in a week or so or something, there's the UK AI and Safety Summit. And I think it would be really, really interesting to see who is there, who's going to be making these decisions. I'm pretty sure it's a government event, so it's pretty closed doors, but have they got the right people at the table? And Regardless of whether you're a tech expert or not, you actually need people from all different backgrounds, all different places in society, all different communities to voice their opinion, because nobody knows how one gets affected by bias except the people that are in these communities.
Yeah, no, I get that. We've got 50 minutes left. Like, let's go to pharmacy, and then let's look at the doomsday scenario, right? Like,
Okay.
let's end on a low, like doom. So I openly admit now I'm using AI as we speak. So I'm using Read.ai to record this meeting. And I was toying with taking the subscription, but I'm actually going to do it. So what that'll give me is a transcript, automatically generated, which is fantastic. It'll give me an audio video recording. And what I'll do with the transcript is look through it and read, I'll edit it, and then I'll publish a little summary article of what we've spoken about, the key points and so on. So point I'm sort of laboriously making here is that I've toyed in my little business, pharmacy practice. I mean, we use consultants and medical writers quite often, Yasmin, but I've never bitten the bullet and actually employed someone because, to be honest, I'm too scared. And maybe that's a mistake on my part. Maybe pharmacy practice would be far bigger than it probably is if I had done. I don't know. Who knows? But I'm too cautious to do that. But AI is solving my problem for me because what it's doing is really acting as a sub-editor as we speak. So it's secretarial work it's doing like right now, and it's also going to transcribe it, and it's going to possibly tidy it up a little bit. So segue to pharmacy, community pharmacy. Let's go back to 1990, Hepler and Strand, pharmaceutical care, right? So the whole idea there was basically that pharmacists should come out the front and speak to folk. Now, anybody that's working a community pharmacy in the UK at the moment would be just barefaced lying if they said that every single person that came into the pharmacy got absolutely excellent pharmaceutical care. They don't. They don't get advice. They often don't get advice when they need it, with NSAIDs, penicillin, just this run-of-the-mill day-to-day stuff that we do as community pharmacists. AI could do that. If AI steps in, like my sub-editor example, and does the pharmaceutical care bit, do you think the role of the pharmacist is in jeopardy?
I think jeopardy is a strong word. I think the view of we that we have of pharmacists will change as our role. Back in the 1900s or whatever. I mean, not even that far back. My dad still has his scales of when he used to make creams in X, Y, and Z in his pharmacy. So it wasn't too long ago where we were the manufacturers, and now we've moved because everything has gone to wholesalers. And then slowly, I feel like we are edging ourselves to the front of the pharmacy. They are away from the back wall. But I think it really varies, like across the board, you can still get advice from a pharmacist. I mean, I know from personal experience, my mom actually makes a point for her to be standing right at the front of the pharmacy to give people advice because they want to see her, or they just want to feel that trust and confidence that they're getting spoken to. But I can appreciate that in lots of different pharmacies, you don't always get that kind of advice and support. So I think what I've seen, there's so much in the media. The media love this stuff. There's so much in the media about, oh, AI is going to take your job. AI is going to do this. AI is going to do that. We just have to look at the different revolutions in history, right? We had the Industrial Revolution that potentially put loads of people out of jobs. No, they just went and found a new skill and used industry to support, like the tools to support them to do their job better. The same here with the digital revolution, right? Like you're using Read.ai. I'm sure so many listeners and readers use ChatGPT to support them in their role. They're still doing their role, but effectively, can we argue that they're doing it more efficiently? They're utilizing their time more efficiently because they've got these tools to help them. So I think that rather than jeopardy, it's more about, I guess, supporting progression and changing what our role is going to be, in the next few years. I mean, I don't think I can. I'm struggling to see what, like, how it would change, but I know it would change.
Yeah, I know. It's quite interesting though, the unknown unknown, isn't it? You know something's going to happen, but and I do appreciate your positivity. I have been known to say the odd strong word over the years in pharmacy practice, but jeopardy is a strong word, I guess. And I was being a bit reductive in how I was positioning that. You know, pharmacists are doomed, and we give terrible advice and so on and so forth. I liked what you said about folk coming into your mum's pharmacy. That's the kind of pharmacist I'd like to go into, you know. I mean, people are not always, but they are scared, they are, their uncertainty drives anxiety, which drives presentation at the pharmacy. And people often just, it's actually been interesting being back in practice as an independent prescriber who's done quite a lot of prescribing before going in back as a non-prescriber. Most of my community pharmacy locum work is actually proving people are well and using. I mean, I'm using an awful lot of my prescribing training, clinical skills and so on, just never actually pulling the trigger. And it's what you're saying, like your mum, it's just people want reassured that they want, but the point remains, to my sub-editor point, if we don't, I think as a profession, if we don't do the basics well, we'll always be at risk to an extent. But I like what you're saying. You're obviously the Bozeropian, necessity is the mother of invention, kind of optimistic
Sorry, I'm an
economist.
eternal optimist.
I
Like
see
you,
that. I
honestly,
like it. Yeah.
you cannot
Yeah.
dampen down my optimism for some reason.
Well, let's finish on the doomsday thing, because that's what everybody's speaking about. So what, I mean, data breaches, but I suppose, but I've touched on one already, bias. What are the other downsides that readers or listeners should really, at this stage, and it's in the context that there is unknown unknowns, isn't it? So stuff is going to happen that we don't know what that is yet. Look at the internet, for goodness sake, it's only, I mean, well, it's only been here for about 30 years, and it's just totally changed everything. So what are your top few red flags or sort of words of caution at this moment in time?
Yeah, I guess in terms of AI or just
AI,
technology
yeah,
in
sorry. Yeah,
yeah.
AI.
Yeah, so I think obviously bias is one. Which we've discussed. The second one, I probably, the word control comes to mind, which is a very strong word, and I should use it with caution. But, every single time we are doing something, our phones are listening, our Alexas, Googles, they're all listening, our laptops are listening. You'll start getting advertisements of things that we spoke about. But at what point does that go to the next level? At what point are our conversations, at what point do we keep our privacy? And to which extent, like I was having a discussion with my brother yesterday actually about like cookie settings and things. And it's kind of like, do we know when we say accept cookies what that actually means? Like, where is our data going? Who is storing it? What purpose are they using it? And, we've heard a lot about data breaches from a lot of health tech companies. And a lot of, I mean, as far as the emails go, I don't know if you've received them, but it's like, oopsie, your data got breached. Oh, don't worry about it though. We're mopping it up. But where did it actually go and who's actually got it? So I think control is one thing, which is why not everyone, like we don't all need to be the keepers, but we need someone that represents us that is going to protect us. Okay. That really knows the field, really gets in. And is ensured that, because you can't be an expert in everything, right? So that our data and our privacy is going to be protected and isn't going to be used for these kind of things. What other doomsday? This is a really hard question for me because
I
I've just
know. Well, I've
said
got
there's
another.
lots of.
I've actually got another hard question to finish as well. But I didn't tee you up for this, so apologies if it catches you on the hop. But what? And this can cover anything. We can broaden this out because we need to finish shortly. What topic are we not topic? Excuse me. What topic are we not talking about in pharmacy that we should be?
That's a really interesting question.
Hmm.
Specific to do with pharmacy.
Just or more broadly, yeah.
Okay. Well,
Technology.
I think if we're talking about technology and pharmacy, and forgive me if this is too skinny, in line, but I guess one of the topics that has really come into my eye line recently, which has an impact on a lot of things, is the, oh God, my brain's gone there, is the, drug shortages. Okay. So I recently learned that virtual manufacturing of medication is like a thing. So it's basically where, these
Interesting.
manufacturing companies, they don't own a physical manufacturing plant, but they do all the ordering from the NHS, they do all the MHRA documentation and all of that, and then they partner with a physical manufacturer to make the medication. So through this discovery, I learned that obviously a year prior or whatever, the NHS or whichever governing body will show the quotas, because obviously we have a lot of prescription data. This is where data can be really used for good, right? There's a lot of prescription data. There's a lot of forecasting, which they do in the financial services to understand how much they need for the year ahead. So what happens is it's up to the onus of these manufacturing companies to make as much. And you would presume that they would make similar amounts to the year before. So why do we have these drug shortages, and why do we have the last amount of drugs that are left for the month going sky high, impacting these pharmacies? Sorry if I'm a bit too contentious, but this is really a bugbear, because it's kind of you're almost manipulating the market when you could actually use AI and data to really assimilate and pinpoint to probably the last 5% of how much do we need for the year ahead. You know, the populate you can even link it back to population growth, right? And say, okay, with the population growth that happened last year, X amount of people are going to need X more omeprazole. So why don't we make it?
So do you think, okay, so that's sort of half, sort of 50% AI journalism, 50% AI holding companies to account and so on. Is that where you're going with that?
Yeah, I guess, if they utilized this sort of technology more in terms of optimizing our workflows, in terms of optimizing drug manufacturing, drug usage, then, you wouldn't have so many issues, presumably, to do with reimbursement, and the NHS wouldn't be losing as much, pharmacies wouldn't be having to turn their patients away because drugs are too expensive to dispense, or vice versa, they don't have them in stock. If we used this technology to kind of pinpoint, okay, let's make it more efficient. But as I can appreciate, we live in a capitalist world. So, there's give and take and there's thing. But then I think within that, the line that comes under that is the umbrella of ethics. Because when you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about medication, and you're talking about patients' health and lives, at what point does that become unethical?
I mean, it's a good point, a philosophical point to end on, but I suppose there'd be strong. I quite like the idea of using AI to hold companies to account. And there has, I won't quote them on here because I've so far, touch wood, managed not to get sued on pharmacy practice, which is I'm delighted
Oh
about.
yeah, sorry if you
Se
do.
seven years in, that's ideal. But yeah, there have been cases of competition law. And the Competitions and Marketing Authority kicking in, and we know certain steroid creams, and I think certain steroid tablet company in recent years were in the press around all of that. So that's an interesting take, an interesting application of AI. Now that is time up. You've got a hard stop, and you've got something
Yeah,
else
I'm
to do. So
sorry.
I just want to say thank you so much, Yasma. I could talk to you all day. You're
Yeah, thank you for
optimistic.
having
It's
me.
been a pleasure. You're optimistic. You're like forward thinking. I wish, well, I hope lots of other pharmacists listen to this and be inspired. And I hope you don't mind me sharing that. I know you just said you had, yeah, just had two kids, but I wish you all the best with your current pregnancy. I think you said
Thank you so much.
you're due in January. So
Yeah.
take care. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Johnny. Lovely to be on.
Yeah,
Bye.
take care. Cheers. Bye.